Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
We are back for another segment of The Standing. A-Count joining me today, as always, current body, is a former HBO boxing producer, and he's the current on-camera host of Ask the Experts podcast and current busy weekend of boxing. Last week, we had no boxing. That means this week, we're going to jam in 4 to 5 shows in 2 days. No fight bigger than Tyson Fury and Otto Wallin. It was the fight of the weekend. It was the fight that we didn't think would steal the weekend, as no one gave Otto Wallin a chance. But you watch the fight, he opens up a cut on Tyson Fury, goes on to land 127 punches in the fight. That is the most ever on a Tyson Fury, landed on Tyson Fury. And I'll ask you, Curran, what did we learn in this fight between Tyson Fury and Otto Wallin?
Dan, I think actually the question should be, what did we learn about Otto Wallin? And the answer to that actually is that he came to win. He has a really good chin. He knows how to make the fight dirty, and he actually went for the home run in the 12th round, which is what you want to do if you are this unknown opponent. So I think Otto Wallin actually made a case for himself to be a tough out and a good opponent for all the top names in the heavyweight division. I don't think any top heavyweight, Deontay Wilder, Anthony Joshua, Andy Ruiz, is looking at Otto Wallin and saying, I can't wait to get a crack at that guy, because he makes it tough, he makes it dirty. Sometimes he makes it a little too dirty, like when he rubbed the cut with his glove between rounds there on Tyson Fury. He tried to open up the cut more. That was a little bit on the edge, and he shouldn't have done that. So to answer your question, I think we learned a lot about Otto Wallin. And what did we learn about Tyson Fury? Well, he has vulnerabilities, just like everyone else in the heavyweight division. And I think actually that's a good thing. That makes the heavyweight division more exciting.
Right. That's the thing about the heavyweight division. You have four fighters at the top. Maybe you throw Wallin in there in that second tier. But, you know, Tyson Fury, Anthony Joshua, Deontay Wilder, Andy Ruiz, all good fighters, but all flawed in their ways. But there was this notion and this belief among all boxing fans that Tyson Fury was the best heavyweight, the most sustainable heavyweight, with his skill set, not being able to get hit, being a 6'7" guy that moves like a welterweight, the shoulder roll and everything. But in this fight, he showed that he can get hit. Yes, the fight changed because of that cut. I mean, if that cut didn't happen, I think Tyson Fury, you know, probably would have got Wallin out of there, because Wallin did seem to lose a little bit of his steam later on in the fight. But, you know, Fury got tagged a lot in this fight. I mean, it took a lot out of him in that cut. 47 stitches over his eye. What is that going to mean going forward? We'll touch on that in our next round. But what does that mean going forward for Tyson Fury? We learned a lot about Tyson Fury. I think one thing that we did learn ultimately, and it's the whole picture of the heavyweight division, is that, yes, there are all flaws with all these fighters. Even Tyson Fury, the guy that we thought had the least amount of flaws, but it turns out that even him, you know, going up and down in weight, losing all that weight, you know, training nonstop, maybe took a little bit of a toll on him. Also, I mean, let's be honest here. If you take a look at the punch stats that I tweeted out last night about the most punches landed on Tyson Fury, he held Vladimir Klitschko to under 60 punches. He held Deontay Wilder to about 75. So it's clear that when the talent is there, when he shares the ring with someone that he takes seriously, he takes the fight a little more seriously. So possibly, maybe Tyson Fury didn't get up for Otto Wallin. That, you know, benefits Otto Wallin, because like you said, he came out looking really good on this, and I think that he'll get a lot of fights moving forward. We learned a lot this weekend, but one thing we did learn is that Tyson Fury is a little flawed heading forward into this rematch with Deontay Wilder.
All right, round two. So we saw Tyson Fury versus Otto Wallin. Now, we all know the big rematch that we want to see, Wilder versus Fury 2. So I'll ask you this now, Dan. Who has the edge going into that rematch?
I mean, well, it's kind of incomplete, because Deontay Wilder hasn't fought Luis Ortiz. And one thing we've seen now in boxing is when you put these, you know, you kind of delay these rematches is that weird things happen, especially in the heavyweight division where one punch can change everything. We saw that with Tyson Fury, the one punch. It was a punch, too. It wasn't a headbutt. We'll get to more of that later. It was a punch that landed on Tyson Fury that opened up his cut. But you have to figure that Deontay Wilder is looking a little good here. He's looking better than Tyson Fury, and I say that with an asterisk next to it because he still has to beat Luis Ortiz. But what did this take out of Tyson Fury? 47 stitches, like I touched on earlier. Never been cut in his career. The rapid weight loss and the weight gain has to take a toll on Tyson Fury. But you go to Deontay Wilder's comments, and he made a comment on Sunday. Of course, he watched the fight, and he said something that he said for a long time about his fights, that guys, when I get into the ring with them, I leave them, you know, I do something to them that's never been done. You know, I leave them damaged. I leave them, you know, I might have been a draw, but I left Tyson Fury damaged. And I certainly believe that. I mean, look at Dominic Brazil. He went off the face of the earth for about 2 months after he got knocked out. Guys that fight, share a ring with Deontay Wilder, end up getting hurt and long-term effects as well.
Who has the edge going into the rematch? It's, of course, Deontay Wilder. You're exactly right, though. Talk to me after you fight Luis Ortiz. Now, if the theory of Wilder hurting his opponent so badly that they're never the same is true, then Wilder really needs to take out Ortiz in the first few rounds there, because that has to prove his theory correct. It's also, if you have to look at how each guy is trending. So Wilder, since his first fight with Fury, he erased Dominic Brazil in a one round. It was a massive right hand, and he just completely erased him. Now, what happened with Tyson Fury? Fury fought Tom Schwartz. Who is Tom Schwartz? I don't really know. And then he fought Otto Wallin. Now, Otto Wallin was supposed to be another I don't know opponent. He was undefeated. He came to fight, and he took Tyson Fury 12 rounds. Tyson Fury still gets a lot of credit, though, from fighting through that cut, right? And he had the adversity there, and he fought through that, and he found a way to win. So he gets a lot of credit for that. Who has the edge going to the rematch? Like I said, I think it's Wilder. You know who also has the edge? People watching on the outside. One of those being Andy Ruiz, who tweeted after the fight, Fury couldn't beat me with one hand behind his back. Fury looked vulnerable here. So you got to know, like we talked about in the last topic, Andy Ruiz and Anthony Joshua are maybe looking at this and licking their lips, wanting the Wilder Fury winner.
Well, how about this too as well? 47 stitches. Is he going to be ready for February 22nd? It's only a few months away. We don't know how that cut is going to heal. I can see Tyson Fury saying, you know what? I've been training crazily. He even says that himself. Maybe they delay this fight even more. Maybe it goes into the spring of 2020. So we don't know exactly what's going to happen with that fight. But I kind of agree with you that Deontay Wilder is trending in the right direction as we head into this rematch that we think is scheduled for February 22nd. Moving on to round number three, a fight that we saw Friday night on DAZN at MSG, the Hulu Theater. Devin Haney moves on to 20-0, a destruction of Zahrour Abdullayev. Broke his orbital bone in the process, but afterwards he calls out Lomachenko. This is the second time that I saw Devin Haney in action live, and the dude is so fast, he's so powerful. I would ask you now, Kern, who is the best young prospect in boxing? Because it's a very long list.
There's so many names in the mix here for best prospect. I was there in the Garden, and I know you were too, Dan, and to see Devin Haney do his thing and land that impressive shot and break his opponent's orbital bone, that is impressive. I also spoke to Egas Klimas last week, who said Lomachenko's plan is most likely to fight the Richard Comey versus Teofimo Lopez winner. So that means that fight with Haney may not be next. Who knows if and when it'll happen. There's so many prospects in boxing, like we talked about, Gervonta Davis, Teofimo Lopez, Virgil Ortiz, David Benavidez, Shakur Stevenson. These are all great prospects. And Haney's obviously in the list. But is he that once-in-a-generation prospect that we're like, this is a lights-out, can't miss? Well, he's 20 years old, so he's still developing. He's got 23 wins, but only 15 KOs. So his KO percentage at this rate in his career is a little low. Now, we obviously saw the power there in his last fight. So to answer your question, Haney is in the mix. Is he the best? I'm not so sure.
15 KOs, not enough for you, Curran?
That's not enough for me. I want a higher KO percentage at this point when you're fighting lower competition.
No, I get where you're coming from there. Yes, I have Haney at the top right now after that performance that I saw on Friday night. I have him up there, with the likes of David Benavidez. I have him up there. But I don't think he's up there just with Teofimo. I think Teofimo's right below him. I think Shakur Stevenson right below him. But I have Haney, I have Virgil Ortiz, and I have David Benavidez as the three top. You can interchange them however you want, depending on who they fight. I like what Haney does, though. I like that his catch and shoot. I think he has all the necessary tools to be a successful guy, and I also think he's very marketable. But I do not think that the Teofimos of the world, Shakur Stevenson, and a Tank Davis I have also at the top as well. I mean, there's so many names that you can't even comprehend all of them. But I think that, yeah, I think it's Tank Davis. I think it's Devin Haney, and I like David Benavidez, and I think that Teofimo and the others are just below them. But it's a great time to be a boxing fan between all those fighters there, all under the age of 25.
All under the age of 25, young guys, and I think the important thing is Devin Haney came up for the moment. So he knew it was Madison Square Garden. He knew he was headlining. He knew a lot of people would be watching and a lot of eyeballs would be on him. And what does he do? He finds a way to knock out his opponent in the fourth round and looks extremely impressive in doing so. So I think that really trends well for him, knowing that he's a young guy. It's easy to get distracted when you're a young guy. Some of the names on the list you talked about have had some personal issues. So I think Devin Haney gets a lot of credit there for staying focused and doing what he needed to do there in Madison Square Garden.
Right. And the thing with the Lomachenko is, yes, I love him calling him out, but we know, obviously, with the politics of boxing, that fight can't be made. I do like him calling out Michaels. You don't see Tank Davis calling out Lomachenko. He stays kind of quiet after his fights, but I have no problem with him calling out Lomachenko. That is Devin Haney, because it shows that he is very confident, but it's a great time to be a boxing fan with all these great young fighters.
Round four in our standing eight count, Brian Garcia and the Golden Boy Promotions drama. So let me try to set up the scene here, Dan, before I ask you the question. Ryan Garcia was set to fight Avery Sparrow. Here's the problem. Avery Sparrow got arrested on Friday before the fight. There was a warrant out for Avery's arrest, and supposedly Golden Boy Promotions knew about this on Tuesday of fight week. Then there was Enel Duno, who was also fighting on the same card, who was willing to fight Ryan Garcia. Robert Gomez of Golden Boy Promotions kind of throws Ryan Garcia under the bus and says, Enel Duno is too tough. Garcia then vents on Twitter that everyone saw. And here was the kicker. Canelo retweeted everything. So here's my question, Dan. How does this end for Ryan Garcia and Golden Boy?
It ends with Ryan Garcia getting more money. I mean, you throw money at problems. That's what you do. It happens in boxing all the time. But never have I seen this in boxing. I've seen a lot of things in my short time in the sport and being around the sport of boxing. But a guy getting arrested the Friday before a fight by U.S. Marshals. Apparently, he was at a Target. That is Avery Sparrow. He came out of the Target. He had helicopters. Russell Peltz said he felt like he had just shot the president. Insane story. But we'll transition to what it means for Ryan Garcia and Golden Boy, because that's what's most important here. Like I said, I think there will be more money thrown Ryan Garcia's way. They're supposed to meet on Tuesday. They're going to sit down. But Ryan Garcia went off the rails on Friday on social media, throwing, Golden Boy, saying that it's a pattern, saying that, poor leadership, you name it. I'm out fighting for peanuts, because apparently he wanted to fight Duno and he was going to just ask for a little bit more money because it's a tougher test. That's really not that crazy of a claim for Ryan Garcia. That's when Eric Gomez flipped around and said that he's too tough. That's when Garcia said, I did not say that. My coach did not say that. That's when you saw the retweets from Canelo. Very messy situation for Golden Boy and what has been a year of messy situations for them. I ultimately think that Ryan Garcia will fight November 2nd against Duno on the Canelo card. I think that they'll keep him happy by throwing him a few more dollars his way. But ultimately, I don't see this lasting much longer than whatever their contracts may be.
So bottom line, this is not a good look for anyone in this situation. And I actually interviewed a journalist, Gabe Oppenheim, a few weeks back, and he said Golden Boy Promotions is actually losing money on all their fighters except for Canelo. So why is that significant here? Well, Canelo is obviously supporting Ryan Garcia, retweeting everything he's saying.
It's his younger brother. He says it.
It's like his younger brother. So he's basically saying, hey, you have a beef with Golden Boy Promotions. I also have a beef with Golden Boy Promotions, Canelo, that is. And why does Canelo have a beef? Well, he wanted this Kovalev fight. It took a little while to make. It wasn't done for Mexican Independence Day. So we all got lucky enough to see Tyson Fury in all Mexican attire. Right. I don't see how they could stay together after something like this. Like you said, maybe they'll do another fight or two. Maybe they'll run out the contract. But I see Ryan Garcia splitting up from Golden Boy Promotions. It's really hard to overcome something like this when you're airing your dirty laundry in such a public light.
Maybe one day we will see Canelo Promotions with Ryan Garcia as his main pupil. Interesting topic, a fluid situation, and always we'll have it covered here. Round number five, and it's more Golden Boy stuff, but no drama here as we have a fight that's finally finalized between Canelo Alvarez and Sergey Kovalev. 175-pound title on the line. That is, of course, of Kovalev. He'll be taking on Canelo November 2nd, live on DAZN from MGM Grand in Las Vegas. A messy negotiations if you talk to anyone that was involved, but a lot of cooks in the kitchen for this one between Top Rank, Main Events, and Golden Boy almost didn't happen. But it did happen, and we're going to see Canelo go for a fourth title in a fourth different weight class. Curran, my question for you, is this the right choice for Canelo? Did he bite off more than he can chew with an aging Kovalev, but still very game?
I actually think Canelo is definitely biting off more than he can chew. Now, okay. I'm not saying Kovalev's definitely going to win the fight, but I think it's going to be a much tougher fight than Canelo Alvarez realizes, and I'm going to tell you why. I think we're kind of underrating Kovalev here, because if you look at his losses, so the Andre Ward fights, right, those were really close fights. It could have gone either way, especially the second one. Was it a low blow? Was it not? It was probably a little bit of both. Then he goes on to fight Eladir Alvarez, who lands, it's not a lucky punch, it's obviously skilled.
Was it a punch from the gods?
As Anthony Joshua would say, a punch from the heavens, maybe? No. But it was skill, obviously, but it was a big knockout punch from a guy who isn't necessarily a knockout puncher. Even before the fight, Eladir Alvarez said, I am not going to knock this guy out. Then Kovalev avenges that loss. So I think Kovalev is still actually at the top of his game. And I think the other thing that is being underestimated here for Canelo is the weight difference. Canelo is moving up two weight classes from 160. He's moving to 175 pounds. Now, Canelo just needs to look at his own experience to realize what that will be like. So first, Mayweather made Canelo actually cut weight. He made him go to 152 pounds for their 154-pound matchup. That didn't end up well for Canelo. Canelo has made other fighters come up in weight. Matthew Hatton, Amir Khan, right? Those guys had trouble against Canelo coming up in weight. So I think actually Canelo is not realizing the beast that Kovalev still is, and I think the weight is going to be a big issue.
And it's funny you bring up the weight, and when it comes to Canelo, just take a look at boxing in just this year. Guys moving up two weight classes, daring to be great. And that's Mikey Garcia going up to 147 to face Errol Spence. Didn't exactly play out well for him. I don't think that's necessarily the case with Canelo. I do think he'll win this fight. I agree with you with some of your points you made about Kovalev. I don't think that he's the beast that he once was, knocking everyone out. I think he's more of a finesse fighter now, and a lot of that has to do with his partnership with Buddy McGirt. He's now more of a jab. I mean, look, he knocked out Anthony Yard with a jab, and that was a really tough fight. And it's also on short notice, sort of say, for Kovalev in this fight. He fought just last month. He's a quick turnaround. That can be good. We saw it good with Andy Ruiz, or it could be bad for an aging fighter. But I do think that Canelo picks and chooses his fights very closely. You interviewed Eric Kelly last week. He said that his Canelo's career has been very orchestrated. This is another highly orchestrated fight, because there were a lot of other champions at 175 pounds that Canelo could have picked, some under the DAZN banner, Dmitry Bivol. I mean, you can go down the list. But he chose Kovalev for a reason. He sees some holes in his game. He thinks he can exploit them. I think it's going to be a tougher match than a lot of people are expecting, but I ultimately think that Canelo will come out on top, mostly with body work.
Round six here in our standing eight count. Mikey Garcia is electing to sit out the rest of 2019. He's eyeing Manny Pacquiao. Mikey Garcia has not made a decision on his future. We know that there's offers from Top Rank, Matchroom, PBC. Everyone wants Mikey Garcia. Dan, what makes the most sense for Mikey Garcia in his career right now?
I like that he's sitting out all of 2019. I think he should sit out even more into 2020 after the beating that he took from Errol Spence. I was in attendance for that fight. He took a lot of flush shots, and he was the smaller man in that fight. And when I saw that he was talking about coming back at the end of this year, I thought that was a mistake. This is a guy that is a businessman first, it feels like, more than ever today in the age of boxing, where it seems like every fighter is a businessman first, then a fighter. But no one fields more offers than Mikey Garcia. No one ponders their career more than Mikey Garcia. But listen, if he is got word that Manny Pacquiao is willing to fight him, and there is an audience for it, you know, both fighters have a huge fan base, especially Mikey Garcia with the Mexican fan base. If someone's willing to pay him that, a very large amount of money, then why would he not take a fight with Manny Pacquiao, a fighter that he has been long rumored with going back to their days at Top Rank? So I think that it's smart for Mikey Garcia to, one, take a lot of time off. Don't rush into a fight with Manny Pacquiao in say, January. Why push it back to the spring? You know, fully recover from that beating that you took from Errol Spence. But I ultimately think the most sense for both guys is a Manny Pacquiao versus Mikey Garcia. Your thoughts?
Like you said, Mikey Garcia just went through hell with Errol Spence. He jumped up two weight classes, so he deserves some time off. I also think he's earned the right to be selective with his opponents. You know, fighter safety has been in the news a lot recently, and I think that if a fighter wants to take time, be a little selective, I think especially when they've earned the right and they fought top people in the past, I think I'm okay with it. So to answer the question in terms of the offers he has on the table, so let's say he has an offer from Top Rank. I don't think that's a good fit because he actually sat out 2 years before with a contract dispute with Top Rank, so I doubt he's going to want to go back.
Well,
there.
He could fight Lomachenko if he goes with Top Rank, which everyone wants to see him fight, and it's two guys at the right weight.
He could do that, but I just think in terms of the backstory that they have there, the fact that he sat out two years, I don't think that'll necessarily end well. He could go to Matchroom and The Zone. I'm sure there's plenty of quality opponents for him there, but obviously it makes most sense for him to sign with PBC. If he wants Manny Pacquiao, PBC is where he's at. Now, it is risky because who knows if Manny Pacquiao wants his fight. He probably does because he probably thinks he can have a good shot against a smaller guy like Mikey Garcia, but Manny Pacquiao is going to be an interested observer against Errol Spence when Errol Spence fights Sean Porter on September 28th. Manny Pacquiao is going to be watching that fight and say, hey, do I want to fight one of these guys? Do I want to try to get a rematch with Floyd Mayweather? So Mikey Garcia's should take time off, but it is risky if he's only waiting for Manny Pacquiao.
I mean, Pacquiao, if you have a choice between Errol Spence and Mikey Garcia and you're going to make the same, roughly the same amount of money if you're Manny Pacquiao, you got to go with Mikey Garcia.
100%. But what about Sean Porter?
No one's really giving Sean Porter the chance to win. But I would fight Porter too if I was back here. But it's Mikey Garcia. It's Floyd Mayweather. Curran, they say boxing is the theater of the unexpected. Never in my wildest dreams did I think that we'd be talking about Logan Paul versus KSI, a rematch taking place on DAZN. But this is where we're at. 6 million viewers on YouTube watched their press conference. If that was a pay-per-view, it would be the most watched boxing event of all time. My question for you here is, they went back and forth at the press conference. We know that's going to be streamed on DAZN. We know there's a lot of backlash, and Eddie Hearn loves the backlash. But is this good or bad for boxing? Is it a money grab, or is this a legitimate fight?
I think it's 100% good for boxing. I think people who don't like this fight are haters, and I'll tell you why. These guys fought, Logan Paul and KSI. They fought already, and it had over 1 million pay-per-view buys. They sold out the arena that they were in. I'm sure, Dan, you guys can provide the punch stats at CompuBox, but it actually was a competitive fight. It ended up in a draw. I have absolutely no problem with them fighting on a big platform, and I'll tell you why. They've earned the right to do that because they're bringing followers and viewers to the table, right? That there's work to be done as a YouTuber, as to put up content, to market yourself, to promote yourself. So in 2019, if you're promoting yourself and you built your own audience, why do you not have the right to become a professional boxer and fight someone else? I see nothing wrong with this. And they're fighting each other. They're two YouTubers fighting each other. They're not taking away an opportunity from someone else. They're not fighting the number one ranked contender, right, and taking that opportunity from someone else. So I have absolutely no problem with this, and I think it's a great thing for the sport. Dan, what do you think?
Well, every time that we see a figure come out from this from this fight, we know whether it was last week with Eddie Hearn saying that, you know, 5,000 tickets sold on the very first day on presale, 6 million viewers watched the press conference. He's looking smarter and smarter every time. Boxing is a business, but unfortunately there are some people, the boxing purists in the sport, look down upon this types of things, and I understand where they're coming from. Yes, boxing to them is a sport with integrity, but let's be honest, boxing is losing its integrity every minute of the day. So when I see two YouTubers going at it, two guys, let's be honest, are taking it seriously. You talked to Logan Paul in an interview with Todd Grisham on DAZN on Saturday night, and Todd Grisham, you know, he said, listen, Paul said, I'm taking this very seriously. Watch our first fight. I went back and we did the stats at CompuBox. They were actually a very close fight. You know, they landed 80 punches, 80 to 72. It was a draw. They're taking the fight very seriously. You can see that Paul has the right mindset. But, you know, let's be honest. Any promoter would do this. Lou DiBella would do this. Bob Arum would do this if they could. Anyone saying otherwise is simply lying, and it won't be the first time that a boxing promoter would be lying to the public.
Eddie Hearn gets a lot of credit for doing this, and here's the bottom line for me. It's 2019, and if you're a fighter, I don't think quietly training and going about your business is enough. I think you should be putting yourself out there. I think you should be engaging with fans, connecting with fans, showing off your training, marketing yourself, promoting yourself, and these guys are doing that, and I give them credit for doing so.
Maybe some fighters can learn something from them marketing-wise.
100%. Round eight, our final round here on Standing Eight Count. So let's have a little fun here. Dan, what is the most overused phrase in boxing? There's so many. There's exposed, ducked, your side of the street, styles make fights, daring to be great. You don't know shit about boxing, right? There's so many. So what is the most overused phrase in boxing?
Well, you don't know shit about boxing is what someone says when they don't have an argument and they run out of things to say. I see that on Twitter constantly. But the reason I wanted to talk about this topic is because there are so many people I see on Twitter after the Tyson Fury fight. I saw it also as with the Teofimo fight, saying that this fighter A was exposed because they were, you know, they got hit with a lot of punches or they were in a competitive fight. I think that there's so many mismatches. There's so many one-sided beatdowns in boxing lately that when we see a competitive fight between two high-level fighters, we like to say that one fighter was exposed. The guy that may should have won easily, you know, maybe had a cruise to a unanimous decision rather than a knockout. I think that ducked, this guy ducked this guy, is the most overused phrase in boxing. But now, exposed is making a run for its money, with number three being you don't know shit about boxing.
Yeah, you know what? I actually have to agree with you here. I think they're all overused, but I particularly don't like exposed and you don't know shit about boxing, and I'll tell you why. Exposed could mean so many things, and it seems like anytime a fighter goes through any adversity of any kind, we're saying he's exposed. Like you said, Tyson Fury had a giant gash on his face. How is he exposed? He won the fight, right?
The gash was exposed. Well, we were exposed to a lot of blood on Saturday night.
Totally, and you don't know shit about boxing, and that's another one that's subjective in nature. I really don't like that. At least if you're saying someone ducked someone else, you're saying, in your opinion, they're trying to fight easier opponents, or if you're saying some of these other things like side of the street. I mean, we know boxing politics exist, right? So there are sides of the street. I know Terrence Crawford in a recent interview said he doesn't believe in sides of the street. Wake me up when the Errol Spence match happens, and then I'll say I agree that there's no sides of the streets. Until then, I think it's true. So, like I said, I don't like exposed. I don't like you don't know shit, because they're just so subjective in nature, and I'm a little sick of these. Now, I know that you had an honorable mention, right, which was you'd like to thank Al Haymon, right?
Right. I think Al Haymon happens with every PBC fighter. Usually they thank Al Haymon before they thank God and their family. I mean, rightfully so. Al Haymon is writing some big checks, and he's getting these fighters big fights. So that's another one. But I also have another honorable mention that I can't stand, and that's daring to be great. Daring to be great means I'm going to make a mistake. I'm making a poor decision with my career, and I'm going to dare to be great, a.k.a. Mikey Garcia, and go up to 147 to fight Errol. That's not daring to be great. That's me. I want to chase the money, and you know, that's fine. But daring to be great also needs to be retired from the boxing lexicon. Please.
I mean, I look at our good friend Brian Campbell's Twitter bio.
He
daring
says
to
a
be
lot.
Great, right? And I think that that's awesome. I think bottom line, I think we got to find new terminology in our sport. And to close this out, Dan, I would say that you've been exposed here in our debate, and you don't know shit about boxing.
Did you have a hard time keeping up with all the boxing this weekend? I did, and I'm a hardcore boxing fan that actually works in the business. There were fights in New York, there were fights in LA, there were fights in Las Vegas, but don't worry, we have you covered here. Bringing back the fastest 60 seconds in boxing, I'll recap everything in 60 seconds or less. Start the clock. Friday afternoon, Los Angeles. Avery Sparrow is a no-show. Sparking King Ryder grabbed the microphone and asked, "Where the hell is Sparrow?" He's in jail, Ryan. He's in jail. Fluid situation. Friday evening, New York City on the zone. Michael the Bounty Hunter wrangled up Sergey Kuzmin and captured his sixth straight win. The second bout of the night wasn't Serrano versus Hardy. It was Ryan Garcia versus Golden Boy, as the 21-year-old took to social media to trash Oscar and company after they threw him under the bus. Canelo retweets everything. Very fluid situation. Devin Haney might well be the best prospect in the sport, as he carved up up Abdullayev, breaking his orbital bone, and he wants Loma. Friday night, we think we're getting Ryan Garcia versus Peter Petrov. Wrong. That fight is off as well. King Rai takes to social media yet again. Saturday afternoon in Los Angeles, Logan Paul KSI press conference brings in 6 million viewers. KSI insults Logan Paul's dead dog. This really happened. 11:15 on DAZN, Oscar De La Hoya wonders about Terrence Crawford's Hall of Fame credentials, prompting this response from Bob Arum.
Who the f*** is he talking about?
Finally on ESPN Plus, Otto Wallin opens up a cut on a sombrero Tyson Fury, puts his glove in it a bunch, but to no avail as the Gypsy King wins a unanimous decision.
Deontay Wilder, I want you next, boom!
Our next interview on Inside Boxing Live is brought to you by Jack Doyle's Restaurant and Bar. Jack Doyle's Restaurant and Bar, located just a few steps away from Madison Square Garden and Times Square. Go into Jack Doyle's for all your entertainment needs. From happy hours to birthday parties to private events, Jack Doyle's has you covered. Once again, that's Jack Doyle's Restaurant and Bar, located on 240 West 35th Street. Dan Canobio here, Inside Boxing Live, here with the man, the myth, the legend, the president of DiBella Entertainment, Lou DiBella himself. That's me. That's what they call me.
I'm friends with this guy's dad for 30 years. I've known him since he was a toddler. He was wearing Pampers when I met him. I don't even know if they invented Pampers back then. Actually, I think they did.
But yeah. Back way back in the 80s. But Lou, you're impeccably dressed today.
Hey, I got my hand-painted TV KO, became HBO, right. Pay-per-view, then became extinct.
Right.
Wearing a very cool hand-painted tie.
Obviously, yeah. The boxing world is constantly transitioning. You talk about TKO to HBO. Now everything is streaming, and that's why I want to talk to you now is the streaming world. UFC Fight Pass getting heavily involved in the world of boxing and Broadway boxing as well, which is your thing.
I love the fact that UFC is getting involved in boxing. I love the fact that Fight Pass is embracing particularly grassroots boxing. Shows from myself, from Roy Jones' company, from Kenny Casey's, Murphy's Boxing, and the Boston area, and other promoters that are doing regional, because it's small grassroots kind of shows, because it's those shows that develop the stars. It's those shows that keep boxing healthy in cities and neighborhoods and hometowns. And I think it's a great way for UFC to get their feet wet in boxing by putting more content on UFC Fight Pass. And I'm thrilled that Broadway boxing has found a home on UFC Fight Pass.
Now, some of the big signings for DiBella Entertainment. It's been a great couple of months for DiBella Entertainment, from the top down to the bottom. Obviously, Sergey Derevchenko fighting Triple G. Tevin Farmer. Right, Tevin Farmer.
Sergey getting a shot. Tevin Farmer will come back late fall. You know, a lot of my fighters are getting chances and opportunities. Heather Hardy and Amanda Serrano this weekend in the Garden. A lot of stuff happening. I've also signed some additional, you know, fighters, some very high-quality fighters. Joe Ward, probably the best, you know, male fighter to come out of Ireland in a generation.
A lot of buzz around Joe Ward.
Tremendous amateur, tremendous fighter. Looks the part, looks like a movie star, well-spoken kid, good kid, explosive kind of power, really, really, really high boxing intellect. I think he has all the makings of a world champion. I'm thrilled that he's going to be working with DiBella Entertainment and Murphy's Boxing. Ken Casey and I will be co-promoting Joe Ward. I'm excited about that, and I think his career is going to explode, and he will be on the Triple G Derevchenko stream on DAZN on October 5th.
How about Victor Padilla? He's a fighter that I got to see firsthand back in Monroeville at two shows ago on Broadway Boxing. Puerto Rican star.
I think
he has the capability to be the next Puerto Rican star.
He's a beast. Victor Padilla is a superstar in the making. He is a beast. He'll be in the main event on October 4th of Russell Peltz's 50th anniversary show. Russell loves this kid, has identified this kid as what Russell thinks is maybe the top young prospect in all of boxing. So you're going to see Victor Padilla on the main event on that Russell Peltz show. And Victor was with Top Rank. He was a real young kid. He signed as like a teenager. And then he disappeared for a couple of years. He really wasn't ready to turn pro. I think the kid has returned. He lost his deal with Top Rank. He was a free agent.
Good for you.
Good for me. It was great for me. The kid came back raring to go, in great shape, an adult, matured, and ready to be a full-time fighter, ready to give what it takes to be a star. I love Victor Padilla. I think Victor Padilla is one of the best prospects I've signed in the last 5 years.
Right. There's a big void when it comes to the Puerto Rican stars, especially in New York. We want to get back to that selling out the Garden like Cotto did over all these years. And he's also trained by Chino Rivas, who's a world-class trainer.
Chino trains Tevin Farmer. Chino's one of the better trainers in the game.
And how about in the female world? You're a trailblazer when it comes to giving females their chance. Obviously, we just saw this with Serrano and Hardy. You have a big signing as a female as well.
Yeah, I signed Christian Leonard Tudu, who's a Dominican fighter of Greek origin. She's a Greek, I believe also she's a dual citizen, and a terrific fighter, very aggressive. She fights, she's a 140-pound world champion right now. She can fight at 30, she could fight at 35, she could fight at 40, and for the right fight, she'd fight at 47. She's another one of these freakish athletes that can move around in weight. Too good to pass up, too talented, you know, regardless of what sex, too talented a fighter not to sign.
So you're saying we can see some Broadway boxings to the islands of Greece? Is that what you're saying? You're going to send us to Greece?
We very well may see Broadway boxing out of Greece.
How about some upcoming shows for Broadway boxing? Going to finish the year strong. We still have, you know, 4 months left in 2019.
By the way, you didn't mention Regis Prograis, Josh Taylor, World Boxing Super Series Finals. Josh, keep talking smack, because you'll be staring at the ceilings, my Scottish friend.
And Derek Chisora, keep talking trash as well.
You know, Derek's the gift that just keeps on giving at press conferences. He's, you know, the guy's a good self-promoter. He's funny as hell. It is what it is, man. You know, like I at least Derek keeps the press conference interesting.
These press conferences to send the drone on a little bit.
Regis wasn't no shrieking violet, man.
He's the only one who stood up for himself.
Because he's got balls. Regis, you said on Twitter, why was I the only one who said anything? Because you have balls.
There it is. But before we wrap up, the next couple of months for Broadway boxing.
Broadway boxing, St. Francis College in Brooklyn, first time they've ever done boxing. Beautiful little facility, about 1,300 people capacity. We're going to be it's going to be loaded with New York fighters, Jude Franklin, Tweedy, Joe Williams. We're going to load that show with and we're going to announce the main events next week. We're going to announce the show next week. Tickets will go on sale soon, October 24th. I'm looking toward coming back November 14th at Foxwoods with another UFC Fight Pass Broadway boxing, and then once again in December.
There it is. Lou DiBella, the head of DiBella Entertainment. A lot of exciting news in the world of streaming, UFC Fight Pass, Broadway boxing coming together to bring you the biggest fights in the world of boxing.